Hello, everyone, and welcome to Patriot Underground. Today is November 29th, 2022. Thank you so much for joining me, folks, to discover the truth beneath the surface. I really do appreciate everybody out there taking the time to listen. So today I'm going to provide a situation analysis report. And specifically, folks, I'm really going to be drilling into this Brunson case that you've been hearing a lot about. And I understand that there's a lot of information circulating, but this is worthy of an entire podcast because the implications of this case, regardless of how it moves forward, I'm going to present my analysis tonight, is going to be groundbreaking for the United States. And I do believe really is going to set in motion a whole cascade of events, all of which are going to be positive, regardless of how this case shakes out now that it has actually made it to the Supreme Court. So I'm going to talk about this case. I'm going to give you all of the up-to-date information. I've watched a bunch of different interviews, and hopefully folks will enjoy this breakdown. Now, there's been an ongoing speculation about the role, what role will a Supreme Court play, if any, in terms of seeking justice for 2020. Now, obviously, we've heard a whole bunch of reports. We've heard rumors, if you want to call them that, or intel in certain cases, depending upon your perspective, about covert rulings regarding both 2020 and 2022. But the difference here is that this case is verifiable. The case is 22-380, and you can go look it up on supremecourt.gov, which I did, and it is directly targeting Joe Biden, fake Biden, I should say, Kamala Harris, or fake Kamala, and 388 members of Congress. Now, this case is absolutely amazing for a number of different reasons. Now, first of all, the first thing that really got my attention, I have to say, when I was listening to, because I hadn't heard anything about this case until a couple of days ago, Lloyd Brunson was on Nino's show with Juan O'Savin and also The Ghost, and this is the first time that I had heard about this case. Now, some of you may have heard about it before, but the first thing that really perked up my ears was when Lloyd Brunson explained to the audience that this case bypassed the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the last roadblock on the way to the Supreme Court. And what happened was is that when it got to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, they sat on the case for the better part of 4 months. They didn't do anything, which is very typical, by the way. And the Brunson brothers got together, and from what I understand, I know there's at least three, there may be four brothers. Rowland was the one who actually wrote up the docket and put all the information together, but all three of these brothers have been working on this case. So they got together and they decided that they needed to figure out, they needed to brainstorm a way to somehow push this case past the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. Now, it's very important to understand that right from the get-go, right from the outset of this trial, of this process, I should say, it's not a trial yet, of these legal proceedings, they knew that all of the courts were going to dismiss or ignore this case. In fact, they were hoping that they would get the lower courts to dismiss the case as fast as possible so that it could make it up to the Supreme Court, because that's the stage, that's the appropriate stage for this case. None of the lower courts really, predictably, were going to make any kind of a ruling on this one. So what happened was, is they got together and they brainstormed, how do we get this thing out of the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals trap that we're in right now so that we can get to the Supreme Court? And Rowland, one of the brothers who is the most legally minded, the way he's described by Loy, found, by doing some research, Rule 11, Supreme Court of the United States Rule 11. And that rule, my understanding, now I haven't actually read it, you know, full disclosure, I've just been getting up to speed on this over the past couple of days, so I've been kind of researching like a demon to try to get all the details to present to you, but I haven't actually had the time because these cases and all of these, you know, legalese takes a while to sit down and read. But Rule 11, My understanding is that the Supreme Court allows the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals to be bypassed, in fact, all of the lower courts to be bypassed in cases of national emergency. And that's exactly what they decided to do. So they wrote up this petition, and it was accepted by the Supreme Court under Rule 11, which is absolutely astounding. Now, you have to understand, folks, which I'm sure probably most of you do, the Supreme Court has anywhere from 5,000 to 8,000 cases every single year that kind of go into an abyss, sort of a black hole. They're never to be seen again. The point is that most cases that desire to get to the Supreme Court don't actually get the time of day. They never make it into conference. They never make it into any sort of litigation. It just goes into a black hole. But the fact that the Supreme Court accepted this case on Rule 11, on the basis of Rule 11, and allowed the bypassing of the 10th Circuit on the grounds of a national emergency is absolutely astounding, and it gets better. So the Supreme Court accepts the case on the basis of Rule 11, and as I said, for 4 months, the 10th Circuit has done absolutely nothing but sit on the case with an attempt, I would imagine, in an attempt to run out the clock, so to speak. And a minute that they got word that this case had been accepted by the Supreme Court under Rule 11, boom, they made a ruling. Now, it wasn't a favorable ruling. They ruled to dismiss. But that was exactly what the holdup was to begin with. So I'm going to talk about the significance of that. Now, when they found out and immediately made a ruling, after sitting on it for 4 months, that to me very strongly indicates that they were taken off guard. That the lower courts expected that Rule 11 would never be invoked. And that the Supreme Court was prepared to accept the case on the basis of a national emergency completely took them by surprise. So to me, this suggests that the Supreme Court is not directly communicating with the lower courts, either through official channels or through back channels. There seems to be some sort of a disconnect there, which is a good thing, because as we know, the entire justice system, for the most part, is rotten to the core. But are we going to find out that the Supreme Court of the United States may be the exception? I think we are, folks. I think it's very, very safe to assume that the 10th Circuit Court thought that they could just make this thing go away. Didn't think that they were going to get any kind of pressure from the Supreme Court. And when they found out that the Supreme Court was receptive to the claim of a national emergency, they quickly jumped to rule in an effort to get Rule 11 off the docket, off that cover page. Perhaps in an effort to assert that the case didn't rise or doesn't rise to the level of a national emergency, which, of course, we know it does. But nevertheless, maybe they were in some way attempting to influence the Supreme Court to sit on the case as well, until its relevancy more or less expires with the passing of time. But like I said, folks, most cases are never even heard. They're never seen. They're never accepted by the Supreme Court. 5,000 to 8,000 cases a year. But all of a sudden, we have this rare example. Really, to my knowledge, and again, I don't have an enormous amount of background in the law, but to my knowledge, this is unprecedented. That the court is signaling an intense desire to see this case progress at a very, very rapid pace. And also, of course, to make sure that it gets to the proper level, which is the Supreme Court. So I'm sitting back and I'm hearing all of this information. I'm thinking to myself, wow, this is incredible. And then it gets even better. It turns out that the court clerk, I think his name is Scott, his name is escaping me at the moment, but the court clerk for the Supreme Court actually pressured in a, not in a negative way, but actually pressured the Brunson brothers to get the case filed a week early. They wanted this case as soon as possible. And obviously, that raises a whole bunch of questions about what are their motivations? Why are they so anxious to get this case into conference? Now, we know that when the Supreme Court struck down Roe versus Wade, it was a monumental day. And on that monumental day, it revealed the moral character of the American people. It reflected who we are. It reflected what we value. But it was far more than that. It was a signal that the Supreme Court is now respecting the Constitution, states' rights in particular, and by extension, the will of we the people to assert our own guidelines, which represent the moral fabric of the culture that we uphold all the way down to the local level. It was a move that signaled a disconnect with the cabal's agenda. Obviously, we know what Roe v. Wade and the abortion industry is tied into. Not going to get into it today, but I've certainly gotten into it in the past. So when they sent the decision about abortion back to the states, and then they expanded the Second Amendment, or I should say shored up the Second Amendment, or defended it, and then, in very short order, also reined in the federal bureaucracies, in this case, the EPA. And in the process, of course, undercutting their whole agenda, and we know that that's tied into climate change. So these were monumental decisions. And even though we celebrated them at the time, for all the right reasons, I'm not entirely sure that all of us understood the magnitude at the time that these decisions came out, of what was being foreshadowed. And I do believe that we are now starting to figure out the process or the path that this is very likely to go. I am very excited right now, folks. Now, I'm going to explore both sides. I'm not telling you that this is 100% going to solve all of our ills, that it's necessarily going to go the way we want it to. But regardless, like I said earlier, the end result of this case getting over the goal line, as Lloyd Brunson put it, into the Supreme Court's hands, is truly remarkable, and there are a lot more details to come. So when I heard that the court is not only willing to accept the case on the basis of Rule 11, which again is a national emergency, but in addition to that, they were pushing for the docket to get to them sooner, that, to me, is a major, major barometer of where their allegiances lie at the current moment, which I happen to believe is with the American people. Now, we're going to find out one way or another. And, of course, it raises all types of questions about what really motivated them or what's motivating them to get this case into conference as soon as possible. What are they actually trying to do here? And actually, we're going to revisit that in a moment. But more information on the case. Just when you thought that it couldn't get any juicier, we also come to find out that in addition to the court pressuring them to get the case filed ASAP, that there is no opposition that was filed by the defendant. So what happened was, the U.S. attorneys that were representing all of these defendants, we're talking about, I think it's 388 members of Congress, and of course, Biden and Harris, the U.S. attorneys that were representing them withdrew their representation. That's right. The plaintiffs notified, or were notified rather, that the U.S. attorneys were no longer representing the defendants, and no opposition was filed to this case that would stall it or prevent it from going into conference. Now, it goes into conference, and what happens is that the justices, the nine justices, sit around the table, they discuss the case, and then they take a vote on whether or not the case should proceed. And by the way, in conference, they do not need a majority ruling. They only need four justices to say, yes, the case should move forward, and that's exactly what will happen. But why did the U.S. attorneys, who had been arguing, and of course we're going to get into the crux of the case, what are they really arguing about, and it has to do with immunity, but why would the U.S. attorneys all of a sudden jump ship and hand the case over to the Solicitor General, who then waived the rights of the defendants to oppose this petition before it goes into conference? And by the way, there's a scheduled conference for this Friday. And even though it's not clear which cases are going to be discussed, given their sense of urgency to get this case to them, I think it's a pretty solid bet that they're going to be looking at it on Friday. And I happen to think that their desire to see this case advance quickly is going to work in our favor. But the key point here is that all roadblocks have been removed. There are no more legal options available to these defendants, to these members of Congress. It's now entirely in the hands of the Supreme Court. It's absolutely incredible, folks. This is a showdown that is brewing between, really, the legislative branch and the judicial branch. And obviously, we've got the executive branch, with fake Biden wrapped up in the mix. But more or less, you've got Biden talking about stacking the court to somehow shift the balance of power. You've got Congress threatening to stack the court, talking about term limits, and in essence, threatening the Supreme Court with all types of actions that would limit their power, and like I said, shift the balance of power in Washington, D.C. Now, that's one consideration in and of itself. The other consideration is that this is probably the smoothest route to beginning to turn the wheels of justice in the right direction without leading us down a path where this could get kinetic. And I've talked about, right from the beginning, I've been very honest that when all else fails, folks, that's why we have the Second Amendment. We are the militia. I've been very clear that I've never believed that we were going to go to war, but I've been very clear that if it ever became necessary, that the American people are more than ready to go that route. So from the perspective of the Supreme Court, not only are they, in essence, taking this case on as a defensive measure, as Juan O'Savin put it, now they've got a loaded gun that they're pointing directly at Congress and saying, you better not try to impose term limits. You better not try to stack the court. You better not try to mess with the balance of power in Washington. But also, from the perspective of the Supreme Court, regardless of where you think their allegiances lie and how exactly they came to be in this position, let's just assume for a moment that they actually don't want to see this country fall apart. Whether they were coerced into doing these types of actions behind the scenes by the White Hats, which I happen to believe is most likely the case or not, regardless, they seem to be, based upon their recent actions for the most part, they seem to have the moral high ground. And maybe they don't want to see this country spiral into civil war. Maybe they don't want to see the consequences of what's going to happen when Every avenue to pursue justice has been denied. Now, do I think that this necessarily means that we're not going to have the military involved? Not for a second. I don't think that it changes the essence of the plan. In fact, I think it's very likely that this could be a part of the plan. Maybe it always has been. We've been hearing over and over and over that we are the plan. Maybe the White Hats were waiting for American citizens, ordinary people, to actually exercise their civic responsibility. Now, these brothers, I have to say, my hat is off to them. Unbelievable patriotic Americans. Now, I don't know who's backing them. I don't know if they were contacted by the White Hats. I mean, these types of details, nobody knows. It could be that this was just entirely organic. And again, the alliance was waiting for this so that this challenge, this petition that's now in the Supreme Court's hands, came directly from we the people. Didn't come from Donald Trump, didn't come from any political faction or interest group. The only interest group it came from is the interest of we the people in restoring justice to our republic. That's where it came from. And maybe that's exactly what they were waiting for, to be able to take this thing to the next level. But I think that it's very likely, folks, that this case is going to be the first domino that is going to entirely upend the system. And we have to remember, really, what was the origin? What was the genesis of this whole case? It all goes back to the stolen election. How many times have we discussed DNI Radcliffe failing to produce the report pursuant to Trump's executive order? They were supposed to have an investigation. They never had that investigation. They voted, these defendants, to not perform an investigation that they were legally required to, and just go ahead and certify the vote. And that ultimately constituted an act of treason. Because by not investigating this election fraud, and there were over 100 witnesses who came forward with all types of evidence. I mean, heck, folks, you've all seen the evidence, but the problem is that the general public hasn't seen any of it because it was stonewalled at every turn. This entire system is corrupt. And part of the plan has been to show us that corruption. But by failing to perform that investigation before they verified the vote, obviously this was a threat to national security. And we know that these people are directly involved in sedition and treason. And so what this case is really all about, and I actually just watched Kerry Cassidy do an interview with Lloyd Brunson as well, and she asked some excellent questions and got down to the heart of the matter, as she typically does. What this case is really about is immunity. Now, I've talked about this issue in the past, how our so-called leaders, our so-called elected officials, write laws that they exempt themselves from. Not only that, they have laws that essentially say, that give them carte blanche to do whatever they want, as long as they are acting and performing their duties as an elected official, they have this layer of protection, this immunity. Now, what was interesting about Kerry's conversation with Loy is that she said that there are, in fact, legal limitations to this immunity that apparently the Brunson brothers were not aware of. Now, Loy was suggesting that this immunity that they've written into the law that's completely unconstitutional, that's completely at odds with Article 6 of the Constitution, which requires a binding oath. You can't have immunity and yet a binding oath to the Constitution. You can't have a blank check to do whatever you want with zero accountability and still be in compliance with Article 6 of the Constitution. So the crux of this case is really getting at the heart of that matter. How is it that our elected officials that are supposed to be representing us, they're supposed to be indicative of a representational government of we the people, how is it that they can make laws and exempt themselves from those laws. But as Kerry pointed out, in cases involving sedition, in cases involving treason, in cases involving threats to national security, these are legal limitations to the immunity that they've built into the law. Now, I haven't verified that. This is a conversation that Kerry and Loy were having, and obviously folks need to go do their own research. But he happened to think that this immunity was just a complete carte blanche, as I said before. So it could be that if there are actual limitations to their immunity for things like treason and sedition, that makes the case even stronger. But ultimately, what the Brunson brothers are arguing, again, is that these immunity laws are repugnant to the Constitution. Article 6 specifically. So what this complaint does, what it calls for, and this is huge, folks, it calls for the removal of a sitting president, the vice president, and 388 members of Congress. And like I said, the Supreme Court now has unilateral authority to do exactly that. He also talked about how U.S. Marshals have served Pelosi and many other high-profile politicians in the lawsuit. So this is a very real situation. The cabal wants to attack the court. And I think it has everything to do with the fact that they ruled on Roe v. Wade. And they sent it back to the states. Not only that, of course, they defied their agenda on multiple levels, like I said. Expanding the Second Amendment. Beginning the process of trimming back the federal bureaucracies. I think that the Supreme Court is just getting started, folks. Now, I understand that there have been some other decisions. I was talking to Jim about this last night. We were getting into some of the indicators. There have been some decisions that seem to be more in line with the deep state agenda. But I happen to think it's very likely this could all just be optics to throw off the enemy, and that the Supreme Court is under the control of the White Hats. I happen to believe, as Jim was talking about last night, they have the goods on John Roberts, and that they have flipped him, and they're going to absolutely stun the world with this announcement. And I think it's probably a very short time from now. Now, a lot of folks out there are wondering, well, what happens if they decide to reject the case? Well, that's a really good question. And as I was talking about earlier, regardless of how this goes down, I think this is going to be a pivotal moment, one way or another. I don't think this case just goes away. I think there are going to be some serious repercussions, because now that, of course, the Patriot community, and very shortly, I believe, even the sleepers are going to catch wind of this case, I don't think they're going to be able to bury this thing. And I don't think that they're going to be able to justify with any kind of legalese, or as the Ghost put it yesterday, sleight of word in their ruling. I don't think that it's possible to justify, to say to the American people that they can just do whatever they want. Not only can they ignore the will of the American people, but they can actually have immunity to commit treason and sedition against the United States and to threaten our national security. Is the Supreme Court really about to take that position? How are they going to sell that to the American people? Because one of the things that Kerry was wondering about is, okay, maybe the enemy has a strategy here, and they're trying to push this case to the forefront as quick as possible so that they can have a Supreme Court ruling on the issue of immunity favorable to them that would ultimately completely cripple justice in the United States forever. I mean, if they come out and they say that we can do whatever we want, and that there's no accountability under the law, I don't think there's any way that they can dress that up to the American people and make that, put lipstick, enough lipstick on that pig, that people are going to accept it. I mean, let's face it, folks. We're kind of on a hair trigger right now. This country is a tinderbox. Now, is it possible that maybe they have a strategy, they being the enemy, to have a favorable ruling and announce to the world, announce to the American people that they can do whatever they want and we can just shut the hell up if we don't like it and use that as precedent to crush literally any type of case that tries to hold our elected officials accountable? Well, that may be their strategy, but I don't think it's going to work. And if they did do that, well, let's just go back to what we've always been talking about. Plan A, if you will. The military. If they come out and they make this ruling and they say, I mean, if they push it forward, I mean, I don't think that they can ignore it, nor do I think they're going to. If they were going to ignore it, they wouldn't have been so anxious to get it on the docket. They obviously have some sort of a motive here. But if the motive is a negative one, and they're going to have a ruling that's going to be so shocking to the American people, and so deeply upsetting to the American people, and really the potential to set off an absolute shitstorm in terms of kinetic violence. I mean, if it gets to that point, well, I think the military would have no choice but to step in, right, folks? So if we get a positive ruling, obviously, that could set in motion a process to completely extract or wipe out any sort of claims of immunity to protect these monsters from carrying out their crimes. And that, of course, and now again, this is a civil case, but that then would open up the door to criminal cases and expose all of the corruption within the system, which of course could also necessitate the military coming forward. I think one way or another, we're going to see the military's presence. To what degree, I'm not really sure. It depends upon, I think in a lot of ways, how this situation shakes out. But the point I'm making here is that even if they deliver a shit ruling, they're going to give the military all the justification that they need. Because if you have the Supreme Court of the United States siding with the cabal and saying, yep, we have immunity and no, or we don't care that it's in conflict with Article 6 of the Constitution, well, at that point in time, they're making a very, very public statement that there is no justice in the justice system. So now the big question is whether or not the Supreme Court is actually going to be the vehicle where we can begin the process of actually getting justice within the system, or is it going to be the last straw that breaks the back of the system and forces the military to come forward? But one thing is for sure right now, folks, the Supreme Court of the United States has a kill shot perfectly lined up that could prevent civil war in America. And I do believe that they are going to take that kill shot. Could I be wrong? Of course I could. But I don't really see how this situation just fades off and just suddenly gets forgotten about. Now, are they going to run false flags? Well, we've been talking about that all along. Doesn't it seem like right around now would be a good time for them to make some sort of a move, to have some sort of a false flag to distract attention away from this? Yeah, absolutely. Do I think it's going to work? No, I do not. But even if they decide to go that route, one way or another, the military is going to get involved. And when the military gets involved, that's checkmate. Now, I have to be honest, folks. When I heard about this the other day, I was very surprised. I did not see this coming. And I don't think a lot of people did. Even a lot of the insiders, even the ghost who was on Nino, said that he only heard about this case a few weeks ago. And Juan O'Savin was actually asking Loy Brunson questions as if he were interviewing him, which to me very strongly suggests that perhaps maybe even Juan didn't see this coming. Is this organic? Is it all part of the plan? Well, maybe we'll find out at some point, but that's not really the most relevant question right now. Because we're not dealing with speculation here, folks. You can go and verify all of this information, everything that I've talked about. I mean, sure, maybe I'm speculating about some things, but I'm always clear about that. But the factual information that I presented, you can go look it up. I did myself. This is a real bona fide case that the Supreme Court of the United States pushed for adamantly. And not only that, they did it, according to Juan, so that they could have this loaded gun to be able to point back at the lame duck Congress that's threatening the judicial branch. And I also thought it was fascinating because he also, Juan, tied in FTX to the conversation, and he reminded everybody about good old John McAfee and his 32 terabytes. And when his whacked coin reached 400 million, I believe that was the number, this 32 terabytes, this kill switch, would be activated. What could they do to stop that? Well, they could crash the crypto market, and they could have the mainstream media try to gaslight the public that this is all just a big Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme that only involves this Sam Bankman-Fried or whatever his name is and his creepy girlfriend and pin it all on them. And yeah, in the process, they would lose one of their major sources of revenue. They would lose one of their major methods of laundering money all over the world that, of course, is tied into every evil imaginable, especially human trafficking. So they had to make a decision. Do we want to risk? I mean, it's not even a risk. It was an inevitability that McAfee's coin was going to hit that certain number, and these 32 terabytes are going to be released. So are they going to go with that, option A, or are they going to go with option B, crash the crypto market? So all of these things are starting to come together now, folks. All of these different puzzle pieces. And I do believe that as time goes on, as the days turn into weeks, and I even hesitate at this point to say the weeks turn into months because, well, obviously time is going to march forward regardless, and this is not going to be something that's going to be over in a matter of weeks. That's not what I'm suggesting, but the real climactic moments, the real drama that's going to, not just for drama's sake, but for justice, the fight for justice, is reaching its crescendo. And this case has got me super, super excited. Because like I say, I just don't see any way for them to make this go away. If they didn't want this case to come to the fore, there are a million different legal maneuvers and lawfare tactics that they could have used. And instead, all of the stars, somehow, some way, seem to be lining up just perfect for this case. Which leads me to wonder, is there a larger design behind this? Was this always a part of the plan? Again, speculation. We don't know. I mean, and again, at the current moment, it's not the most relevant question per se, but it certainly is an interesting one. Because I've never seen, and I've been paying attention now for quite some time to politics, and again, I'm not an attorney, I'm not an expert in the law, I can't claim any of those credentials, but I've been paying attention for a long time, and I have never seen a case or heard about a case with these types of ramifications potentially just sail to the Supreme Court. Almost as if they were beckoning this case to come home to where it belongs. Now, We always have to be on guard. We always have to look at both sides. And I think that Kerry is very right to have a very sober analysis about this whole thing. That the dark side may have a strategy here. And that we shouldn't overlook the potential for them to somehow use this case to further enslave us. But is it going to work? Is that going to be accepted by the American people? Is that going to be accepted by the White Hats? Because the fact of the matter is, we can talk all day long about the military and what's going on, the divisions within the military. And we can talk, I mean, my listeners remind me all the time about all the evil that goes on, and even in order to be promoted, I think Jim was talking about this just yesterday, you have to perform in these satanic rituals within the military. It's tied in to the evil. I get that. But we know that it's not all bad. We know the military has good elements to it. We know that there's a reason that Trump federalized a million members of the National Guard. And they're using National Guard members and Marines and Special Forces primarily to carry out most of these types of covert operations. You think they didn't perform a house cleaning? You think they didn't know who was who? I mean, sure, over this past couple of years, I'm sure they've smoked out a lot of people. But again, folks, this ties back into the art of war. You don't go to war unless you've already won. Or to use Juan's phrase, it's not ready, fire, aim. It's ready, aim, as long as you need to line up that kill shot, because you only get one shot at it, and then squeeze the trigger when the time is right. So this is absolutely an incredible time to be alive. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this breakdown. I'm obviously going to be all over this thing. I'm going to bring you reports as soon as new updates come out. Like I've talked about, I am definitely committed to doing more of my own content, producing more of my own content. I do have an interview coming up on December 7th with Utsava. I'm sure most of you in the audience have heard of her. She is a very well-known individual who has psychic abilities. So I'm very, very excited about that. We're going to be having a conversation, not next week, but the week after. I think I said the date, December 7th. But in between now and then, I am going to be watching this case like a hawk. And I will bring you all the latest details as soon as they come out. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Make sure you check out the links in the description. First of all, don't forget to subscribe to the different platforms I'm on. I'm on BitChute, Rumble, and Podbean. Make sure you hit that like button. If you did enjoy today's podcast, leave a comment. Let me know what your thoughts were and your reactions. I love reading the comments. It's a great way for me to interact with my audience. And, you know, the trolls are the trolls. They don't bother me. I expect it. But the core of my audience always communicates amazingly well. And I look forward to that. Make sure, folks, that you also click the links in the description to follow me on Truth Social and Telegram as well. And I just set up a Twitter account. I know that probably a lot of you are off Twitter, but now that Elon is at the helm there, I've decided to give it a whirl and spread the truth to all the normies on Twitter to the degree that I can, to the best of my ability, so you can follow me there as well. Make sure you click the link for PatriotSwitch.com to check out the absolute best company out there, a patriotic company that manufactures their products right here in America with non-toxic, healthy ingredients to support your health and your family's health. The items that you buy, that you set aside money for, you need to buy them. Why go into the big box stores when you have a patriotic alternative, folks? It's a no-brainer. Make the switch today, PatriotSwitch.com. And one last thing, folks, please consider becoming a patron. You can click the link in the description and you can make any kind of monthly donation and you will have the first access to all of my content. I post everything on Patreon first. I made that commitment. So thank you to all of my patrons and thank you to everybody out there in the audience who supports me in whatever way you can. I love each and every one of you and I'll be back soon. God bless and Godspeed. Patriot out.